True diversification is you have a certain amount of assets in the stock market, and then you have other uncorrelated assets outside the stock market. For example, money under your mattress, money in a safe, savings accounts, money in real estate, other contracts, equity indexes. There's a lot of things out there that can help insulate and diversify your money.
You're listening to the Engineer of Finance podcast with Ken Green.
Hi, this is Ken Green, the host of the Engineer of Finance podcast, and I thought it was important to do this episode. And the title of today's topic is The Stock Market Be Afraid. I was talking to a good friend and client last week, and he mentioned to me, so I just don't understand what a stock market, I mean, we're just getting the worst of worst news for everything between economics, how our governments are handling COVID, all of it. Why does the stock market keep going up? And I called him out a little bit. I said, you haven't been listening to my episodes lately because I've talked about this. But then I realized maybe I haven't emphasized enough. I've said over and over again, you know, I had this love-hate relationship for the financial industry. We have access to the best products, in my opinion, in the world. At the same time, if they're not used in synergy, very dangerous. And my big beef is that it seems like the majority of financial advisors talk about the stock market as the end-all solution. It is my bright and shiny object. With that said, my tolerance for losing money is pretty limited. I mean, personally, I haven't had anything in the stock market. Well, less than 10 bucks for the last 4 or 5 months because I don't understand the game anymore. And we've had this historic V-shaped recovery, and it makes no sense until you understand the details behind it. And what I was talking to my friend about, and if I haven't emphasized this enough on the podcast, if you're within 5 to 10 years from retirement, especially 5 years, and you cannot afford to lose any of your money in the stock market, it shouldn't be in the stock market. Now, you go talk to the majority of financial advisors out there that make money on commissions, buying and selling securities, which aren't so secure, in my opinion, the, you know, stocks, or make good money in assets under management. And the ones that do real well for their clients, they deserve it. They deserve it. But the majority, from everything I've read, everything I've studied, do not outperform the S&P 500. So then when you're paying 1.5% plus in assets under management, and you understand living off the spread, and historically the S&P 500 without dividends has averaged right around 5%, and they're taking 1.5%, so you're netting 3.5% in growth. Is that a good investment strategy? Now, I didn't want to go on that tangent, but my point is why do we have this V-shaped recovery? And so I'm talking to my friend, and I thought I made this clear, talking especially with a lot of clients one-on-one, is what has happened in COVID with this desire to save our economy because all of a sudden, no one's going to work, right? We're told to be all the how they come up with the term, how they define who's essential and non-essential is beyond me, because everyone needs to go out and earn an income. And so I would have loved to have seen a different response. This is kind of my joke. Like, hey, anytime we lie, understand that government is always going to protect itself first. And central planning, it's too complex. It is a bad idea. That's why I'm not a fan of the Federal Reserve and the central banking mechanisms and fractional banking. I think it's just too few people making big decisions for hundreds and hundreds of millions of people. It's too hard. You know, I feel that if we had the education and the context and we're provided good ways of how to handle money, how to protect ourselves from any type of flu or bug and this COVID-19, that and provide the education and the help, let us do what we can do that's in our best interest, protect us individually and families. To me, that's a by far better approach than what, and I don't envy what these politicians have to go through. I just question the intention of some, or actually many, right now. I'm just personally infuriated that the bars are still shut down. Not that I'm an alcoholic, but I like getting a drink, and I like seeing these bars do well. And there's a lot of entertainment and fun in Midtown Reno. And to see the restaurants open, which I'm so grateful for, and we have all the grocery stores open with, you know, constraints, why in the world can't the bars be open too? I mean, how many of these people have just put so much of their the entrepreneurial mindset, all the work, everything you have to do to run a bar, and all of a sudden just not know how to operate their business? I watch businesses in California. Like one of my brothers, he has a great gym in Newport Marina, and it's shut down again. What did they do for income? It's crazy. Now, it's a tangent, but it's just, I'm not a fan of central planning. When it gets too complex, it's just too much. And then so you apply that to the stock market and you look what's going on. The Federal Reserve just gave you some numbers, and I'll give you a reference. Like if you go to USA Today, there's an article, I believe it was done in May or June of 2020. I'll have it in my show notes, talking about $3.5 trillion in this bailout money for COVID. And then so what's occurred is that the Federal Reserve, which is the more and more they print money, the less valuable your dollars are. More and more money, it's a divider. And so the more and more in circulation, you got $100,000 or $1 million sitting in your bank account, and they double the money supply, and that all gets into circulation. Your $1 million isn't $1 million anymore. It's going to have the purchasing power of half. Now, how long will that take to realize and see? I'm a little afraid not too long, the next few years. So when they're printing all this money and then handing it over to the government, the Treasury, I have never seen this before, and I haven't at least publicly seen it, but you have the Treasury buying trillions of dollars of securities stock in the stock market. And then they started buying bonds, or maybe simultaneously, might be a little bit off, but you understand the context of it. They start buying a lot of bonds. And then that wasn't enough. Then they started buying junk bonds on top of it. It's an illusion. I mean, it's real, but it's not real. And so when we see that our GDP is in the toilet, when we see record unemployment rates, it's like their celebration last week was, oh, we only had $1 million file unemployment. That's a rate. That's new people filing unemployment. I guess way better than 40 million, but we need to get things moving again. And my comment is that this whole response to the pandemic, poverty is a way bigger killer, I'm afraid, than what COVID has turned out to be. And I don't want to get on COVID because it's become its own religion. But why has the stock market gone up so much when we have not near the production and growth and consumption pre-pandemic? Well, it's because our government is feeding it. It's almost nationalized our stock market. Now, at some point in time, it all has to come to a stop. Our dollar, the U.S. dollar, is a world reserve currency. It has enjoyed that status for a long, long time after the World War. And the reason why we can have a trade deficit is because other countries are willing to take U.S. dollars in exchange for the assets we buy and consume. The Federal Reserve understands this. Our government understands, which let me emphasize this too if I haven't emphasized it. The Federal Reserve is not owned by our government. It's central banking, and you have other Federal Reserves throughout the world, essentially, with other nations. And what's still keeping our dollar strong relative to the other currencies is that they're paired. So although the Federal Reserve is printing money like no other, the other countries are printing even more. So relative to Japan's currency, Canada, Europe, our dollar is still remaining its strength. But if we print out too much more and too much more, at some point in time, it all has to stop. Our government understands this. Our Federal Reserve understands this. And so if they can't keep artificially propping up, in my opinion, the stock market, and I don't know how much longer that's going to go, what has to stop? If no one's buying anymore, we don't have this just outrageous amount of money being stuffed into the stock market, what has to happen? It appears to be a V-shaped recovery, but we have a very intense election coming up in the next couple months. Who knows what's going to happen? I mean, there's such a huge divide between the two parties that's unreal. And unfortunately, it just appears both sides really don't seem to be watching out for our best interests. That's a whole different topic. But once the Treasury stops buying stocks, securities, which aren't so secure, bonds and junk bonds, and there's no one buying, what has to happen? And usually things get discounted. We watched it near the end of the quarter this year. When no one wants to buy, things get discounted, and they get discounted substantially. And fear always outweighs greed. And so what I would encourage you is that if you're within 5 years to 10 years from retirement, and you have, you know, the financial industry teaches, which I disagree with what they teach, but this is what 99% of them, of what they teach, is that if you have $2 million sitting in your retirement account, your qualified plans, and it's all assets under management, let me step back. If you have $2 million sitting in the stock market and you're near retirement and you're going into retirement and you're going into the distribution phase, the industry teaches, they used to teach 4%, now they're teaching less than 3% withdrawal rate, which I've talked about in previous episodes in the past. But even on an optimistic 4% withdrawal rate on $2 million, that is $80,000 in passive income that they're advising you pull out every year, or no, not to exceed that, so that you have a more certainty of now of not outliving your money. That's why they're teaching a 4%, or if you look at more extreme side, 3% now because of low interest rate environments. So 3% on $2 million is $60,000 a year. If you're near retirement and you see what happened back in 08, 09, can you afford to lose half your portfolio and then have a 3% withdrawal rate on $1 million? $60,000 down to $30,000, that is a big haircut when you've retired and every day has become a Saturday. And so I want to just emphasize this one more time for this year, that if you're within 5 to 10 years from retirement, especially 5 years, talk to your financial advisor and ask as ways to diversify your portfolio to insulate it for a potential stock storm that is coming our way. Now, I don't have a crystal ball, but one thing I think is a very helpful question that I ask clients all the time, and in this regard would be, if you have $2 million $2 million sitting in the stock market, it's all sitting there, and it's very typical for most households, majority of their wealth is in their 401ks or traditional IRAs. If you take your money out or put it in a cash position or take it all out and stuff it under your mattress as a form of diversification, and the stock market still keeps going up and up and up, can you live with missing out on those returns? Another way to look at it is if you have all your money sitting in the stock market and we have a 50% correction or 40% or 30% correction, or your $2 million on a 30% correction goes down to 1.4, or on a 50%, your $2 million goes down to 1 million. Can you live with that? Which is more painful? And although I don't have a crystal ball, but if you can look at it in that way with your finances, those are certainties that you know emotionally how you're going to react to. And that should help influence your decision. Now then, once you know on that piece, then go to your financial advisor. Hey, what if you have one, what can you do to help insulate? Now, if they talk about diversifying by moving more stuff out of stocks into bonds, but it's all still under assets management, I don't think that is the wrong answer, in my opinion, 99 point whatever percent of the time. True diversification is you have a certain amount of assets in the stock market, and then you have other uncorrelated assets outside the stock market. For example, money under your mattress, money in a safe, savings accounts, money in real estate, other contracts, equity indexes. There's a lot of things out there that can help insulate and diversify your money. And if they don't have the answer, I'd be more than happy to help you. Don't hesitate to reach out and talk to me for a few minutes, and I'll help point you in the right direction. The whole point of this podcast, and I have such great dreams for it, and a few years ago, was just getting over my fears of getting behind a microphone. I craved to make a difference. I craved to be the advisor that did not exist for me when I was 22. I want to show people a different way to play the game financially and see more money in more families' hands than more money in just a few institutions' hands. Now, right now, we've had what appears to be a great V-shaped recovery. Now, this episode won't come out for several more days, another week, you know, this Thursday, upcoming Thursday. So that the timestamp, you know, it's going to look like I'm a week late on this whole episode. I hope not. But my point is that when you see what looks like, and you look at the stock market, look at the S&P 500 index, and it looks like a perfect V-shape, like too perfect V-shape recovery. And I kind of mentioned when I was getting my California PE license, I had to take some seismic training to take the California specific test for seismic design. And so I'm going to these 8-hour workshops. And I think there's like four, at least four of them. And the professor, I mean, he's a brilliant mind. And one thing he said that I thought was so simple but was brilliant is that when you're looking at structures, you're looking at buildings, you're looking at homes, and if it just right off the bat doesn't look right to your gut, it just doesn't make sense or doesn't look natural, like just doesn't look like a strong foundation, it most likely isn't. It's probably a bad foundation. And so when it doesn't make sense to your gut that the stock market is just going through the roof, has this perfect V-shaped recovery, it's probably not a strong foundation. So we're formed what's known as from technical analysis, what's called a double top formation. It dropped down real strong. It's now rebounded really strong. And now it's created record highs and it's just bumping its head on a resistance line and it's really struggling to go up. This V-shaped recovery could become a W very, very quickly, come right back down again, maybe even go further, and it could take a, could. I don't know, I don't have a crystal ball, but it could take a long time to form a W and get back up to its former highs. Years. So it'd be kind of like a really weird looking W. So that's today's episode. The stock market, be afraid. Now, I'm not saying don't make fear-based decisions. I'm saying making rational decisions. Look at the outcomes. Ask yourself these type of questions. Can you endure that kind of loss? If you're 20 years out, 30 years out, 15 years out, and you have it in qualified plans, it's like, hey, man, this is part of my accumulation strategy. I'm just going to let it ride. Pedal the metal, great. But if you're getting near your distribution phase and you need this passive income in combination with your Social Security to have a very fulfilling retirement, seriously, look at all this. And I hope this episode has created a lot of value. My website's engineerofinance.com. I'm trying to put more and more content up there. I just promoted for accredited investors to become part of my Green Machine Investor Club. So you can click on that button and set a time to talk to me to see if you qualify to be part of that investor club. And then also, I just had one other thing I want to start asking and bringing up for everyone is that I want these episodes to be five-star episodes. I want to provide a lot of value for you. If it was not a five-star episode, I want to hear how we can make it a five-star episode. Please send me an email to info@greenfi.com. My email address is in the show notes. I always say, don't forget the E on green. info@greenfi.com. And if there's any other, I want to know if it's not a five-star, I want to know how to make it a five-star. And also let me know any topics you'd like to discuss or something I've said that you like or something I said that you didn't like and you want to understand more about. And that's it. Engineerofinance.com. I'm so grateful for everyone who listens to the show. I crave for it to be, I don't know how it's possible because it's a really high bar, but I crave for this podcast to become the quality of what Joe Rogan's podcast puts out. I so enjoy the guests and the content, and he's, I think, an incredible host and the humor. And so I'm hoping that this podcast over time, and with your guys' feedback, it could become the Joe Rogan of podcasts for the financial industry, where it's just one big financial playground where we talk about fun topics, tough topics, and how we can just learn how to take the next step together to move forward and create something where we enjoy a lot more use of our money today and create the potential for a way wealthier tomorrow. Thank you so much, and I look forward to our next episode.
Thank you for listening to the Engineer of Finance podcast with Ken Green.